Welcome to Politics Done Right. I am your host, Egberto Willis. This is a progressive program that will take the mystery out of politics. This is the program that will encourage you to make sure government becomes we the people. Whether you are liberal, progressive, conservative, or otherwise, you get to air your point of view. We are an independent media outlet that, unlike mainstream media beholden to corporations, we only owe allegiance to you. Remember, you can also send me a tweet at EGBERTOWILLIES. That is at Egberto Willis. Let us engage. It is Politics Done Right. Welcome to Politics Done Right. From the studios of KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, your community radio station, we have a great program for you today.
We are going to talk about some good stuff. You know what's the title of the show today? It's kind of gliffy, right? Activist reporter, now politician, Joy Ann Reid calls out America. Biden hits back. Christie slammed. This is live on KPFT 90.1 FM, folks. So again, CNN reporter that I worked with. Well, I tell you what, let's do it this way. Nicole Wallace slams Christie for his book, giving Fox News a pass for lies and conspiracy theories. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie likely did not expect the grilling he got from Nicole Wallace. She started her necessary attack relatively quickly. The poor man didn't know what hit him. Joy Ann Reid, she agrees with me. Remember last time we spoke, I told you about that Quinnipiac poll? Well, she claims it shows an incoherence of the American populace. It's not an incoherence, really. But anyway, Joy Ann hits the nail on the head. The Quinnipiac poll shows an America that has allowed the mainstream media to spin them. It was confirming listening to her speak. It really was. I pointed it out in a recent blog, and I'm going to attach the blog to the blog post that corresponds to this particular show as well. Biden slams profiteering oil companies, corporate thugs, using their hostage taking to push green energy. The president, true to form, actually called out oil companies. He used their legal theft to promote the need for green energy. Some will see the interview, or not the interview, but it's more was a press conference, and consider it a relatively passive speech. Yes, it was rather passive, but ironically, it may touch the people who are not real Democrats, the ones that like to call themselves independents, and the ones that can't bring themselves to support the fascists that the right wing has become. It's a good chance. It'll make a difference for them. Now, Cliff Olney was a friend of mine back in the good old days when CNN experimented with something called iReporting. It was a whole bunch of us from around the country that became independent reporters. In other words, we brought CNN a whole lot of stories for free, but we got a whole lot of exposure. Those of us who worked hard at it, we got a whole lot of exposure on CNN. There were times that I would be on, I don't know, probably 3 to 5 times a week, doing 15 to 30 minute segments. But you know what? They realized that many of us saw that as an opportunity to push our activism. And I think they probably got a lot of pushback from the right, because without ever ending the program officially, they migrated it into more social things. In other words, cooking. And I did a little cooking piece there as well. And they migrated it into many other kinds of things away from politics. And then they didn't. When we gave iReports on political candidates or political positions, suddenly those weren't being absorbed anymore. Well, Cliff Olney was one of the prolific iReporters out there. And when he was no longer an iReporter with CNN, he decided, you know what? I'm going to run in my community of several thousand people to become a council person. And he ran and he lost and he ran for mayor and he lost, but he never gave up. He said, you know what? I am looking at the goal. And he did. And he is now Councilman Cliff Olney. We're honored to have him here today. He's going to close out the show for us. But anyway, I want to talk a little bit about what occurred in two places. First, in Wisconsin, where that assassin got off. He goes, and you know what? You know, many of us were shocked. We expected him to get off, assuming it were people of color that he killed, but it wasn't. So we figured just maybe this may be the time. But they sent a shocking message. Allies of POCs, beware, because you will be treated like them if you are helping them promote equality, if you are acting with them to promote that which is right. Now, luckily in Georgia, we got, in Georgia, deep south, but of course you had to have video. You had to have the guy actively saying, hey, black dude running in my neighborhood, I'm going to shoot the brains out. You had to have that level of evidence. But the conviction occurred. And at least it will hold at bay those who would use ridiculous slave days laws to claim citizens' arrests to hunt down and lynch people of color. America made a step backwards in Wisconsin, but they made a step, two steps forward in Georgia. Let's keep it going. Again, folks, we have a great show for you today. I want you to remember after the show to go ahead and share it over and over again. The only way we're going to change America, the only way we're going to change for the good, the only way we're going to institute morality, it's for us to do our part.
You can get Politics Done Right Mondays through Fridays on Facebook Live at facebook.com/politicsdoneright, on YouTube Live at politicsdoneright.com/YouTube. Please do not forget to follow me on Twitter for updates. My handle is at Egberto Willis, at EGBERTOWILLIES. Before you get started, please remember to keep your community radio station in your minds, KPFT in your minds. Talk about it. Tell your friends about it. Tell them you know about this station in town, 90.1 FM Houston, that needs your support, that is there to provide what that nourishment that we need. 713-526-5738. KPFT.org. Visit us online. Contribute online. KPFT. 90.1 FM. You can visit us at kpft.org.
Let's get busy. I want to play a video this video that you've got to see. You've got to see. And then we will take it en el otro lado. We'll continue thereafter. So check out Chris Christie. And then we'll take it on the other side.
The book is called, it's about conspiracies and lies, and you really don't take on Fox News. Why not?
Look, because the book.
Have you seen the Tucker Carlson?
No, because the book, no, I don't watch it, but the book.
Are you aware of what he does?
Not really. I don't pay a lot of attention to it.
It's a book with truth deniers, conspiracy theorists on the cover.
Right.
And you attack CNN and the New York Times and MSNBC and not Fox.
But excuse me, I don't attack them as conspiracy theorists or truth deniers. I talk about bias.
And is bias more dangerous to the country than conspiracy theorists?
No, but that's the third section of the book
where
I talk about the movement forward. In the center portion of the book, we talk about the conspiracy theories and the truth denying that went on with things like QAnon, Pizzagate, the election situation, John Birch Society. And that's what I talk about. There's two sections of the book, and I'm sure accidentally you're conflating them.
I'm not conflating them, but I don't think you have. I don't think it's an intellectually honest case to make against conspiracy theories without taking on Fox News.
Well, then you can write that in your book.
Well, I'm not trying to rescue the Republican Party.
I understand. Well, whenever you want to write your next book,
I guess my question is, you want to run for president. What's your relationship with Fox News going to be?
Well, first of all, I didn't say I wanted to run for president. You said that. So let's be clear about
A lot of people have said in the last 3 days you haven't corrected anybody.
Well, I understand that.
Quick to jump in and correct the record.
No, what I've said is that I certainly will think about it, but I won't make any decision for at least another year.
Do you think that Fox News in prime time is good for the country or bad?
Listen, there are shows that I like in Fox News, and there are shows that I don't like. Like, there are shows that I like.
Are you afraid to question the purveyors of conspiracy theories and
lies? By the way, but that's your opinion. You're welcome to your opinion, like everybody else in this country is welcome to your opinion. I don't consider people like Sean Hannity or Laura Ingraham purveyors.
I didn't say either of their names.
Well, Tucker Carlson. You said the evening news programs at Fox News.
The 8 p.m. hour.
And as I told you, I don't watch the show, so I don't know what Tucker does from night to night. If I watch anything at night in news, because most of the time I'm watching sports, but if I'm watching anything in news, I'm usually watching either Sean or Laura.
So you may or may not support Donald Trump in 2024. You may or may not run for president, and a book about liars and conspiracy theories doesn't have anything to say about Fox News.
No, the book talks about, you continue to conflate it. And you know what?
I don't know how you talk about liars and conspiracy theorists without talking about Fox News. I was a Republican. I think they've done more damage to the party than anything else.
I'm sure you do. But if we want to go through that, I think there are liars and conspiracy theorists on MSNBC and on CNN also. So maybe I'll write a book about all that. But that's not what this book is about. In that section of the book, I'm talking to Republicans about the way I believe we need to deal with media to be most effective for winning. The conspiracy theorists and truth deniers, which nobody else on either side of the aisle is writing about right now other than me. No one else is writing about
that. But do you want to solve them, is my question. If you want to solve the proliferation of conspiracy theories without dealing with Fox News, it's like solving terrorism without dealing with the terrorists.
Well, look, that's your opinion. I disagree with your opinion. And I don't believe, and I think it's irresponsible, Nicole, to analogize Fox News to terrorists.
I'm not analogizing them. I'm talking about root problems.
You write about
being a prosecutor. And I want to understand what your solution is to the title of the book. It's about truth deniers and conspiracy. How do we purge the truth deniers and conspiracy theorists
from our party?
Yeah.
From our party. And it's by telling the truth to our voters.
Where?
To our voters.
Where do you do that?
Right in my book.
No, but where do you go? Where do you
go buy it? Go buy it. It's on sale today and you can do it.
Where do you do it? Speeches? You do it in where do you?
Sure. I did it at the Reagan Library in September. I did it at the Republican Jewish Coalition just this past week. And every other place that I go, I will be talking about the fact that the Republican Party must once again be the party of truth. And if we do that, then we have a chance to be a winning party again. And if we don't, then we're going to be consigned to what happened to our party in the 30s when Herbert Hoover lost the House, the Senate, and the White House. The only other time it's happened in Republican Party history, and then we were out of the White House for 28 in the next 36 years. I don't want to see that happen to our country, and so that's why I'm speaking out. And I can't be responsible for everybody else, Nicole.
I hear you.
I can be responsible for myself, and that's what I'm doing by writing this book and by coming out and talking to you about it, even in a place where my opinion may not be completely welcome.
No, I appreciate that. And I think you are a straight shooter, and that's why you're here. I just think that if you care about the party, I think Liz Cheney cares about the party. I think you have to deal with the places that echo the mistruths and the conspiracy theories. And I'm just asking if you think that's part of the solution or could be.
And what I'm saying to you is the battles that I want to pick are the ones that I picked in that book. And there's no one else picking those battles. And so I'm going to take those on. And then if there's more to take on to make sure that the party is the party of truth and the party of solutions for citizens in this country, I'll take those on, too, because, you know, I've never hesitated to do that.
The battles that I pick are the ones that I picked in the book. And in the book, I made sure not to say anything negative about the biggest conspirator in this country, Fox News and the people on Fox News. I make sure not to alienate them at all because I know I will need them for my presidential run. And if I ever alienate Fox News, how can that book be honest? How can that book be truthful? If you don't specify that the cancer in this country comes from Fox News. And I am not going to only blame Fox News. Let me give you something that I saw on Twitter, and I didn't take copy it or anything, so it's floating around somewhere. But Chuck Todd goes on, and he's, you know, during the signing of the infrastructure bill, you know, it was a good event. You know, Chuck Todd equated it to somewhat of a funeral. He didn't say funeral. He used another word. But here is somebody that is supposed to be on a progressive channel. That's what you guys like to call it. I'm talking about my right-wing brothers and sisters. It's a progressive channel, a liberal channel. And here Biden is signing a very important bill that's going to help a lot of people and make a whole lot of Republicans and Democrats rich. And he says, oh, if this had happened in August, it would have been great. If this had happened in September, it would have been great. But it's happening in November, so it's like a funeral. What? You mean $1 trillion being spent 3 months out suddenly becomes a funeral as opposed to a joyous occasion? That is how our media changes the narrative and puts it into the psyche of many Americans. And many Americans see a television anchor, a television host, and they get their cues from these people. I am asking more people, please at least get some of the cues from yours truly and from others, Daily Coast and from Op-Ed News and from Common Dreams. Could you get some of your oomph from those of us in the independent media who actually tell the truth and tell you what's going on? Could you help us do that? And if you are listening to us, please remember, could you share our stuff? Could you support us the way the corporate structure supports the other side? Could you please? That is what we like need. I want to start with Joyanne Reed. You know, a couple of blogs ago, I pretty much said that I think the Quinnipiac poll was really off. In other words, it made people look like they don't understand what's going on in our politics at all. And so I did a blog about it. And I think I played that blog today as well on KPFT at 11. I'm not sure, but I think I did. But then last night I was watching Joyanne Reed. And, you know, she pretty much said similar stuff that I said on the piece. And I looked at my daughter and said, hey, Ashley, check this out. She's saying the same thing I said earlier. And she said, Dad, you should play that on the show because, you know, kind of, you know, I think there's stuff in numbers, right? So listen to Joyanne Reed, and then we'll take it on the other side.
Republicans, what they do, while it is fascism curious in many ways, is also, it's more attractive in some ways. They're the permission party. They're saying, go on, tell that racist joke. That's okay. Don't worry about it. You don't have to wear your mask. Don't worry about COVID. I know 700,000 people died. That's not your problem. They're the party that's basically permitting you to do what you want. And so for a lot of voters, I looked at this Quinnipiac poll. Let's go through some of this. The Quinnipiac poll, Biden's down to 36%, 53%. And yet, everything is incoherent about it. 42% of people in this Quinnipiac poll say that Democrats, only 42% say Democrats care about your needs and problems. 54% say no. But more people say Republicans don't care. This whole thing about immigration, border security, inflation, Republicans are pretending that's what's taking Biden down. Only 8% said either of those things are the most important thing when unprompted. Which party would you like to see control the House of Representatives? After saying all these things that indicate that they think Republicans care less about them, more people said, but give them control. None of it makes any sense, Tim. The only way I can explain it is that there was another number in here that said that economic things, only 25% collectively said those are the problem. 75% said non-economic related things were the problem. It's feelsy things. It's that something about this country doesn't feel right to people. And I think that is what Republicans are using to win, is that people just feel off. My Amazon stuff is late. I just don't like the vibe. I don't like wearing a mask. I feel annoyed. And when you feel annoyed, you want Republicans.
Look, I think that that's pretty close to right. And I think that there's a vibes element to this, if you will, Joy. I do think that Quinnipiac poll is a little bit of an outlier and below what Biden's other numbers are. But still, even if he's in the low 40s instead of mid 30s, you know, that's not going to do it for next year in the midterms. I think in addition to what you just said about how the Democrats being the government party, they're particularly the government party right now. And yes. If you look at the Virginia election a couple of weeks ago, right, if you're a voter in Virginia, you're looking at Washington, you say, well, the Biden's in the White House, the Democrats have the Senate and the House, my governor's a Democrat, the Virginia legislature's a Democrat. So if I'm annoyed about schools, if I'm annoyed about masking, if I'm annoyed about all these various different things, let's give somebody else a try, right? And so I think that there were a number of things happening, you know, in that Virginia election, but I think that we'd be wrong to dismiss that. That's why it's so hard for a party in power in the first year of a midterm anyway. The stakes are so high this time, though. And I do think that my criticism of the Democrats is that there's a little bit of business as usual. Mm-hmm. And that if I were, you know, advising them, I'd say, like, let's look at the things that people are concerned right now and see how we can signal to them, do everything we can to signal to them over the next year that we're trying to address them. Now, that's not going to change the vibes concern that you laid out, but I think it would help kind of mitigate, you know, this gap a little bit.
Here's the thing, Juanita, if Democrats could put the same passion that they put behind censuring Paul Gosar into telling their base that we're going to really fight for voting reform, we're going to really fight for policing reform, we're going to really fight to protect you from those guys, because we understand that they want to put autocracy and fascism curiousness and take down this Democratic, experiment. We're going to put the same passion behind that we put behind rebuking that guy. I think they'd be in better shape.
She hits the nail on the head. If we really started talking about what everybody really wants, which is the things that we stand for, Democrats, progressives, etc., then that it's true. Make people want to run to the poll to vote for you because they know you are going to be fighting for them. You know, the Republicans are very good at doing that. They don't really fight for you, but they tell you they're going to fight for you. And they tell you about the issues. You know, they know that their sect are really into the abortion thing. Of course, unless their daughter get knocked up. They know that they're really into criminal justice. Of course, until their kids gets involved with shooting a gun or in drugs. You know, they know that their people are into all those things that they want other people to pay for. They know that. Right? And that's how they campaign. Democrats need to learn that. And when Democrats learn to do that, they can't lose. I am Egberto Willis of Politics Done Right, KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. And I'm asking you to donate to KPFT this Giving Tuesday, November 30th. Giving Tuesday is a global generosity movement unleashing the power of people and organizations to transform their communities and the world, something KPFT has been doing since 1970. KPFT has endeavored to transform its community by airing views you don't often hear on the air in South Texas and airing news that often doesn't make it onto commercial channels. If you want KPFT to continue to air more about what's going on in this area's diverse communities and more about the issues impacting your locally and nationally, please use this Giving Tuesday, November 3rd, to donate online. kpft.org. Again, please be so kind. Support community radio at kpft.org. Biden did something today in his speech that I loved. I want to play this and then I want to interpret it. So Biden gave a speech today on gas and a little bit more. But if anyone listened between the lines, there was a very important message. Check it out.
You know, today, though, I want to address another challenge that families are facing, and the one I think they're most focused on right now, high gas prices. This is a problem, not just here in the United States, but around the world. The price of gasoline has reached record levels recently in Europe and in Asia. In France, at the end of last month, it reached about $7 per gallon. In Japan, it's about $5.50 per gallon, the highest it's been in years. Of course, it's always painful when gas prices spike. Today, the price of gas in America on average is $3.40 a gallon. In California, it's much higher. The impact is real. But the fact is, we faced even worse spikes before. Just in the last decade, we saw it in 2012 when the price of gasoline hit $3.90. We saw it in 2014 when it hit $3.69. And as recently as 2019, we saw it surpass $3 in many places. The fact is, we always get through those spikes, but we're going to get through this one as well, and hopefully faster. But it doesn't mean we should just stand by idly and wait for prices to drop on their own. Instead, we're taking action. The big part of the reason Americans are facing high gas prices is because oil-producing countries and large companies have not ramped up the supply of oil quickly enough to meet the demand. And the smaller supply means higher prices globally for oil. To address these issues, I got on the phone with leaders from other countries grappling with this challenge to try to find ways to lower oil prices and ultimately to the price you pay at the pump. So today I'm announcing that the largest ever release from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve to help provide the supply we need as we recover from this pandemic. In addition, I brought together other nations to contribute to the solution. India, Japan, Republic of Korea, and the United Kingdom have agreed to release additional oil from their reserves, and China may do more as well. This coordinated action will help us deal with a lack of supply, which in turn helps ease prices. The bottom line, today we're launching a major effort to moderate the price of oil, an effort that will span the globe in its reach and ultimately reach your corner gas station, God willing. I've worked hard these past few weeks on calls and meetings with foreign leaders, policymakers, to put together the building blocks for today's global announcement. And while our combined actions will not solve the problem of high gas prices overnight, it will make a difference. It will take time, but before long, you should see the price of gas drop where you fill up your tank. And in the longer term, we will reduce our reliance on oil as we shift to clean energy. But right now, I will do what needs to be done to reduce the price you pay at the pump. From the middle class and working families that are spending much too much, and it's a strain. And you're the reason I was sent here to look out for you. There's another issue that we'll be addressing as well. Because the fact is, the price of oil was already dropping prior to this announcement, and many suggest in anticipation of the announcement. The price of gasoline in the wholesale market has fallen by about 10% over the last few weeks. But the price of the pump hasn't budged a penny. In other words, gas supply companies are paying less and making a lot more. They do not seem to be passing that on to the consumers at the pump. In fact, if the gap between wholesale and retail gas prices was in line with past averages, Americans would be paying at least 25 cents less per gallon right now, as I speak. Instead, companies are pocketing the difference as profit. That's unacceptable. And that's why I've asked the Federal Trade Commission to consider whether potentially illegal and anti-competitive behavior in the oil and gas industry is causing higher prices for consumers, so we can assure the American people are paying a fair price for the gasoline. I also want to briefly address one myth about inflated gas prices. They're not due to environmental measures. My effort to combat climate change is not raising the price of gas or increasing its availability. What it's doing, it's increasing the availability of jobs. Jobs building electric cars like the one I drove at the GM factory in Detroit last week. For the hundreds of thousands of folks who bought one of those electric cars, they're going to save $800 to $1,000 in fuel costs this year. And we're going to put those savings within reach of more Americans and create jobs installing solar panels, batteries, electric heat pumps, jobs making those clean power generating devices. And by the way, deploying these technologies for each home where they're installed is going to save folks an additional hundreds of dollars in energy costs every year. Let's do that. Let's beat climate change with more extensive innovation and opportunities. We can make our economy and consumers less vulnerable to these sorts of price spikes when we do that. And finally, even as we meet to work out this challenge, it's important to maintain perspective about where our economy stands today. The fact is, America has a lot to be proud of. We're experiencing the strongest economic recovery in the world.
I hope you guys understand what he said in this regard. Number one is that what I did is I didn't just say I am going to open up the oil reserves here in the United States, because oil is a commodity. You open up the reserve in the United States, it's a fraction of what would be needed to bring prices down after you have a cartel that decided not to pump oil. Remember, there's never a shortage of oil right now. This is a manufactured shortage by the corporate thugs that control the oil industry. Remember that. And for anybody who's talking about oil and trying to defend the oil companies and throw it on the government, they are slaves. They are slaves. They are in mental chains because they have allowed the narrative to be created by oil companies who are stiffing them. So here's the deal. This is what's important, people. Very important. He said, I went to China, I went to India, I went to all these other countries and say, open up your oil reserves as well. We're going to put more oil in the market since Saudi Arabia don't want to put the oil on the market. Since all these the United Arab Emirates that are controlled by the oil companies don't want to throw the market to increase prices. We are going to start giving a little push to put more oil on the market. And when we start making money from selling our oil, these guys are going to start saying, oh, wow, the government is going to be making a profit off of selling the oil out of the national reserve. We can't give the government that profit. Let's go ahead and drop the price of oil so we can put it out there. But the other thing he said is, look, the oil companies have been jacking us around all the while. That is why we need green energy. Because if we're on electricity, electricity doesn't know from whence it is generated, whether it's oil, whether it is solar, whether it is gas, whether it is wave, whether it is wind technology. We abstract our energy for cars and all of that from the oil thugs. The oil corporate thugs are no longer able to hold us by the pelotas. And that is what that speech, when I listened to it, I started listening to it, I said, oh, hell, Biden is actually fighting without fighting. In other words, he's saying, I am going to get you suckers. I am going to teach Americans that, in fact, you guys are thugs. You are. And then he says, I'm going to investigate you now, because how can the barrel of oils continue to drop and you don't change it at the pump? You are profiteering corporate thugs. You're no different than that petty thief. No, actually, you're a lot worse than that petty thief that goes into the 7-Eleven or the store and steal a dime or whatever. You are thugs. You are killing people. It's just like the video I showed you yesterday. It costs $6 to make a vial of insulin and they sell it for $300. Thugs, they're killing people with a smile and a tie. And then you want to, you get somebody who goes and steal a chocolate or steal a piece of gum, and you want to throw them in jail? The people that belong in jail are the thugs that are getting a lot of people killed from medicine. And that's why I say we need to nationalize energy, nationalize healthcare, and we leave free enterprise for the areas that aren't essential, absolutely essential for humanity. And when we learn about those concepts about humanity, then we can actually change that. Today, we are honored to have Cliff Olney, a business owner and activist, a former CNN I reporter. We did a whole lot of stuff together over the years at CNN and other places. He is now not just an I reporter, not just a business owner, but he became the councilman, one of the councilmen of or council people of Watertown, New York. Cliff Olney, welcome to Politics Unwrapped. How are you doing today?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Let me tell you something, man.
It's been a long time.
You know, we were all grassroots guys, always trying to make a difference. And, you know, we always talk about politics, et cetera, who's going to go out there and join the fold. And, you know, man, you didn't only join the fold, you did it and you won after some trepidation. But why don't you tell us a little, give us a little history here.
Well, it was in 2015. And before that, you and I knew each other, right?
Right.
You know each other now. And that my daughter was born, my second daughter, Marissa, was born prematurely. So when she was born, we had full insurance, right, coverage. A Cadillac policy, as they referred to it during the Obama, the Obamacare debate. And so they dropped us. And when they dropped us, they said to us that it was cheaper for them to litigate it than it was to pay the bill of $280,000. So I said, oh, that's not right. Went to my GOP congressman. He said, well, you know, things happen. So I became an activist and started fighting for healthcare on a national level. And so I dabbled into the local politics in 2015. I got punched out in the primary. But then in 2017, there were two issues that were going on in the city of Watertown. I couldn't believe the people that were in charge at that time didn't want to rebuild the Thompson Park pool. Now, this was after years of neglect, right? They've not done things that they needed to maintain it. And so they felt, well, there's too much money, you know. So I said, obviously, it's not. And that is a gem. And that brings a lot of other tourists to that park for the zoo and other things that we had up there. And so I jumped into the race. We knocked out two intransigent council people that were already on the council. I didn't win. I came in third, but Lisa and Ryan did win, and they got the Thompson Park pool built. And there's so much more that we can do. So I thought, all right, in 2019, I had another opportunity to run for city councilman again and maybe get in this time. And then I saw this very conservative mayor who had run and been in council before he decided to run. So I said, there's no way I'm running for council. I'm running against him as mayor, for the mayor of the city. Of course, then two other people jumped in. They split the vote. He slid in with 38% of the vote, and he's been there for the last 2 years. Well, his time in office has been riddled with cutting pools, selling off our heavy rescue truck, which gave the city a much better response time to an emergency, and on and on and on. It just goes on. And it's like this punitive measure after measure that this guy has just, you know. And actually, I think what has happened over the last 2 years, and people have seen what he's done and what what he had was two reliable yes votes. And the other two that were in the minority, the two that got in 2017, the progressives, weren't able to do anything. So this year, what I did was I made it a referendum on him. Are you better off now after 2 years of Jeff Smith than you were when he took office? Yes. Sound familiar? Was that Reagan morning in America?
Remember that?
And people made the decision. They weren't better off. And it was tough because locally we have this very powerful public benefit corporation called the Development Authority of the North Country. And they decided that it was okay for them to run their economic developer or development manager against
you,
me, and everybody else who was in the race. Because what he needed was one more person to say yes. And quite frankly, just to give you a little background, the way this opened up the opportunity is council votes for mayor every 4 years. Well, it wasn't, and plus two council people. This year, we had the opportunity to replace two city councilmen and one of the councilmen that won in 2019, who was a good friend of his and a reliable yes vote for the mayor, decided to resign because he was sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
And sick of saying yes and couldn't develop the ability to say no. And he just got out. So it opened up three seats and we took all three. We were drawing to an inside straight. All he needed was one more ace in his hand.
And so now you got a progressive council.
We have a progressive council. So the first thing is, of course, is to learn what is going on, all the levers, where they are, and that kind of thing. And now this week I'm going through orientation with all the department heads. So that's been interesting. And so that's pretty much it. So this is the third time's a charm. Well, this was the fourth time.
Well, let me tell you something. Let me tell you why this was so intriguing to me, because we talk a whole lot about grassroots and we talk about people who really want change running.
Yes.
But we have a lot of talk and we don't have a lot of people doing it. Some who say they're doing it. Now, some would say, okay, well, why don't you run? Well, each of us have our ace to play in the game, right? Well, you decided to get up there and run. But most importantly, you asked the right questions. If we take a look at how the Democrats are performing right now, one of the things that they're not doing is asking that question, are you better off today than you were before? And likewise, what have you done for me lately? And what specifically are you going to do? And it seems to me like you covered all your bases. You did an interview earlier for the station out there. And it was evident that you covered all the bases. And, you know, the guy knew it. He ran out of questions for you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, it was what was most interesting about this race is that I've been looking for the answer as though is the answer. And I think Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, they wrote a song about they finally thought they found somebody who knew the truth. And it came down to, it was a child laughing, right? There was no truth. It was the simplicity of what it is that I saw on the trail. The biggest thing, I'll give you an example of what it was. My daughter came over to the house and she said, "Dad, I want you to explain something to me." I said, "What's that?" She says, "I went by a house on Arlington Street and it had a Trump 2024 sign in it on the front yard."
Wow.
It had a Lisa Ruggiero sign, which is, she's a Republican, but she's a moderate and sensible, like the old
right.
style Teddy Roosevelt kind of Republican. You don't see that much now. And you had, she says, "And I saw a Cliff Only sign on the same yard. How do
wow,
you square that?
Really?
How do you square that?" And I said, "Well, I think here's the thing. What I've come to the realization of is this. Democrats need a much better messaging machine out there. All right. We're not saying what we're doing. And what people want, if you look and listen to, look at what's going on and listen to the people, what they're asking us to do is to, they want a good government. They want a government that works. They want a government that provides things for them. Now, the speed at which that happens is different from a conservative or progressive point of view, but they want the same things. What we find, what I find is that the Republican Party right now is stealing our ideas. All right. And they're running their campaigns on our ideas. Now, the girl that was in this race is very much so conservative. All right. She, on the top of her sign, wrote, "Vote for progress." Right? She's a conservative, my God. And I looked at that, and then she had an ad on the local news website, and it was "Vote for progress." And so I got a little peeved, and I said, "Well, she's not getting away with that. If you think progress is cool, you better embrace the concept. It's not just something on a campaign slogan on a sign." So I got out back with the sign, and I got out back with this ad that she had in the paper, and I stood there in front of my camera, and I said, "Vote for progress." I said, it says on her campaign sign on the top. I said, "Vote for progress." It says on her campaign ad on the news site. I said, "If people are going to vote for progress, they're not going to be voting for you, Michelle." I said, "You're a conservative." I said, "People want progress. I said, if it's something you think that you really like and enjoy that idea, then you should embrace the concept." And I said, "You know, any forward movement, even if it's at a snail's pace, I guess could be considered progress." You know, so, you know, she's within her rights to say she's for progress. But, you know, my question is how much, how fast and when. You know, it's like the Republicans say, "We're going to create jobs." Okay, where? First, in China. Secondly, how much do they pay? You know, you go through the whole thing. So I guess to summarize is that people want government to work for them. And unfortunately, what we saw, I think, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, but this is what my analysis was, when Bernie ran against Hillary, Bernie had the progressive ideas. And when he got knocked out in the primary because of all the different forces that were aligned against him, Trump was watching. And Trump saw that it was in a very effective populist campaign against Hillary Clinton. And he adopted everything that Bernie was saying about bringing the jobs back, lowering the taxes, creating more good paying jobs. You go right down the list. He didn't plan on doing any of it, but it sounded good. And so what these guys are doing is they're taking our message and they're selling it to our people. And we're not countering it. We're not going back.
Let me stop you right there. Because I've written about that at the Daily Coast, exactly that, where Donald Trump didn't only triangulate Democrats, but he actually took our ideas, knowing that he would never bring our ideas to pass. But the problem about it is our neoliberals have no intentions of passing the ideas either. And that leaves a lot of people in limbo. Do we go with the neoliberals or do we go with the fascists? Which ones?
The fact is that where progressives are right now is where the country needs to be. But
right.
Just are not up to speed where we already are. And I'll give you an example of what I think. A lot of the Democrats are saying, well, we need a woman in there to be able to represent women's interests. We need a black man in order to represent black interests. We need a Hispanic person and, you know, I don't know, Asian, whatever, Jewish guy to represent the Jewish people's interests. A real true progressive will represent every person's interests.
Exactly. No matter
what the color, what the religion, what your sexuality is, nothing, it doesn't matter. And when Sanders was doing what he was doing, he could transition all of these different ethnic differences that we have in our party. And so instead of us having to completely, you know, it's almost like we have affirmative action within our party to be able to get the right people and to represent the interests of each individual group, instead of saying, look, we all have the same interests. And a person who can recognize that and is totally unbiased in any of his beliefs about any of it, and the differences between us, we should celebrate those differences and then create policy that actually does celebrate those differences and creates a policy that supports the differences as well, equally. That can be done, but we still have that to, we have to bridge that gap, I think. I don't know.
No, let me tell you, I agree with that wholeheartedly. If you take a look at some of the stuff that we write about, right? I tell people all the time, I can't beg or ask anybody to like me, but I can demand that policy is there that makes sure that you and I, Cliff, have the same access to success, that we have the same equity, all those things. Now, we're not talking equal. We're not talking equality based on anything other than equal access to success.
To success. Equal opportunity.
Exactly. Right,
this country. And it's about that. If you have the equal opportunity to people are going to, you know, the idea of income inequality is another word. I think what we need is a Frank Luntz, only a Democratic version. All right.
You know what?
I mean, that seriously.
Is so true.
Yeah.
That is Frank Luntz is a master at what he does. And you know what? Sometimes he even laughs at himself. Sometimes he'll be like, damn, that actually worked.
Yeah, it did. You know, well, remember George Bush's compassionate conservative phrase? Yeah,
come on.
Okay. In other words, if you want to parse the thing and look at it and take it apart, it's that the compassionate conservative mindset feels bad for the people that he's taking their food stamps away. I feel bad that I got to take your food stamps. I'm a compassionate conservative, my God. And people bought it. They lapped it up. And so I'm not suggesting that we come out with things like that. But when you have abortion rights versus women's choice, you know, the different ways that we frame it, gun control keeps coming up in news stories about the things that we're trying to adopt. But we're not trying to control guns. What we're trying to do is create universal background checks so people that shouldn't have guns don't get guns. You know, and so until the messaging is clear, let's face it, we're facing a machine on the other side.
And you know, Donnie Deutsch last week came out with a sort of a master plan for Democrats. And I wrote a piece this morning, actually, where I said, you know, I'm not a fan of Donnie Deutsch. Donnie Deutsch is a neoliberal, but he is a Democrat, right? And Donnie Deutsch comes out and he says, we need to really get our messaging right, and we need to put people out there on all the daily shows, on out in mass, 24 people out there all of the times. Because what I wrote in the article is I said, you know what? What Donnie Deutsch is saying is real, but it's already been implemented and shown some success. How can Republicans with such lousy policies garner such support? And the only way that has been done is because they follow that methodology.
You know, the idea of neoliberalism, when you look at it, and it's touted as such a great thing because, you know, of course, we want business to do well. All right. What we failed to do, I think, and what I failed to do is point out to people that government has an essential role in the economy because not just of regulation, because regulation is something that everybody gets their back over. What it does, I'll give you an example of a local situation, and we have to translate this into the more national policy. We have local trash haulers in town. They pick up people's trash. Watertown also has its own municipal trash service. Okay. And I talked to the trash people about this, what we might do for policy. Some people on council right now, the more conservative ones, would like us to get completely out of the trash business as a city. Get rid of it. It's costing us money. We're not making anything on it. Well, you know, the Navy doesn't make us money either. The post office never was designed to make us money. It was a service. Okay. So this mindset of if it doesn't make us money, we should get rid of it. Well, maybe we should get rid of roads. You know,
it makes no money.
They
right?
make us money. Maybe you can put an odometer in and send people a bill monthly. My point is that I said to the individual I was talking to, he was conservative. It's number one. I said, if you get rid of the city's trash business, I said, what you do is you set up a situation where all the private haulers can raise their price any way they want. I said, what government is a stabilizing factor. Right. Now, we don't want to present our product so much lower than the private companies that we now are predatory. But we need to be in there just a bit, maybe, to keep them, give them an incentive to keep their pricing reasonable and still be profitable. Now, if they come to us and say, look, you're lower than what we can afford to run our business at by a quarter, then, you know, it can be, it should be considered that we may raise our price on our,
you know, using that trash as an example.
You know what I mean?
We need to use that trash as a quick example before we move on here. The trash company is going to be likely held by shareholders. And there are two things that they're going to have to do: cut the pay of people who pick up trash. And if they cut the pay of people who pick up trash, those people were the people in your community who were spending in these grocery stores and other places, which were paying sales taxes, et cetera. And likewise, if they go to the private sector, all it means is a nice, good old transfer of wealth from the city to a few wealthy individuals as you marginalize the workers who are actually there picking up trash at a lower cost. I mean, at a lower wage now. So, I mean, it's not a hard concept. Now, I want to jump onto something before we end this here because we're running out of time. But there is this big hoopla about the supply chain problems as well as inflation. And every calculation that I've done so far tells me that this has nothing to do with government. It's a failure of the private sector that is creating inflation that is not due. In other words, a false inflation because of those who have price and power. And secondly, that the supply chain's problem is shows that this efficiency that we always talk about, the private sector with things like just-in-time inventory, et cetera, that they have shown that they are not at all more, they are not at all more than we are. They are not at all more efficient than we are, than government is.
No question. What you're talking about, it's true. The idea started back with NAFTA, and what we did was outsourced, the economy of scale and other things to countries that we felt could do it better. Now, all of those things were based on everything working perfectly. Now throw a pandemic into the works.
Yes.
Slow down the whole mechanism to the degree that we can't do just in time anymore. You know, just in time is a great concept. I used to work at a box company, and we sold that idea to companies rather than them inventorying many boxes at a better price that they paid a little bit more for just in time delivery because they didn't have to inventory or tie their capital up for that those products to be on hand for 6-8 months. They don't need that much. You can get them there in 6 weeks. So they're not running out at the same time they're getting when they getting the boxes when they need it. So when you add all of what's happened with the shortage of workers and the unwillingness of some people to get the vaccination, the thing that I've heard mostly is workers aren't going back. Well, people are getting sick. What good did it do you to get your vaccination? Because people with the vaccination are getting sick now too. But it's an entirely different virus. It mutated. What we were vaccinated for, that virus, we're immune. We have immunities for that. Now it's something different. So, you know, the conversation has been distorted so much. But going back to what you're saying, when we outsourced a lot of our jobs and manufacturing to other companies or countries, and we relied on them to deliver. And when you're 6 or 8 weeks or however long it takes to get from China over here for masking, you saw what those things did and that supply chain did just in the early parts of the pandemic, right? We couldn't get masks. We couldn't get the PPE. We couldn't get all that stuff. And unfortunately, that should have, somebody should have thought about this a long time before because it wasn't a good idea. It's a national security issue. If you think of our two biggest economic competitors like China and also with Russia, all right, well, China mostly, All right, what are we going to ask them to make our berets for our soldiers if we go to war with them? Or maybe we could say to them, hey, could you just maybe slip us some chips for our Humvees that we're going to use in a war against you? You know, all of what was done, if we were a galactic society, one worthy of being noticed by other civilizations around our galaxy, one that was actually worth coming to on a less primitive society than what we still are, with the xenophobic points of view that we have. In a perfect world, it would be okay. And if we, yeah, all those things. But if you know, it's
all the ifs, all the ifs. Hey, Cliff, yeah. I don't know how many of my interviews you've listened to, but the same old question that I asked, the last question, and it goes this way. What would you have liked me to ask you that I didn't?
Oh, my God.
I told you.
Oh, I think the thing we need to be very concerned about right now is our democracy. What I see is that there's so much misinformation from talking to people out there. They believe that it is one, that they have similar beliefs about government and things, all right, as what progressives do, conservatives do, but they blame the wrong people for the problems that we're seeing. They're convinced that it's all the Democrats' fault. It's not. You know, when I look at the differences between us, there's not much as far as differences in only in the capacity, the speed at which something would get done. It's on who they blame. And I blame the media that is forwarding this up. And I'll tell you quite frankly, the one thing that has surprised me the most is that until this has all happened, this is good in one way. We've got to get on top of it. We got to get the message right. We got to get that out there. Is that I never knew people were so vulnerable to the propaganda that we see, so yes, gullible and willing to believe nonsense when their own critical thinking isn't working for them. And I think that it's because there's been false narratives, but I think more importantly, there's a certain mindset to people who are inclined to embrace authoritarian type government. They don't know what to do with their freedom and liberty, and they look to somebody else to give them the answers for that. Honestly, you and I have been friends a long time. I have plenty to do of the time that I have, and I don't need somebody else telling me what to do with it. All right. They seem to, even though they claim that they're independent, they want somebody to be dictating to them what their time is used for and how they should go out and spend it. I don't agree. So we got to find the right message to clarify, I think. And thank you so much for inviting me to come on and talk. And I'm excited because of all that's happening.
Let me tell you, we're very proud of you, Cliff. I mean, we're going to go into that CNN I Report group and really said, hey, we did it, man. We did it. Cliff Olney is a business owner, activist, former CNN I Reporter. He is now councilman of Watertown, New York. It's been my pleasure to have you on Politics Done Right. Thank you so kindly for having been here, my friend.
Thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate it.
You can get Politics Done Right Mondays through Fridays on Facebook Live at facebook.com/politicsdoneright, on YouTube Live at politicsdoneright.com/YouTube. Please do not forget to follow me on Twitter for updates. My handle is at Egberto Willis, at EGBERTOWILLIES.
Welcome to Politics Done Right. I am your host, Egberto Willis. This is a progressive program that will take the mystery out of politics. This is the program.